Of course, it's pure arrogance. That's lovely. It's just pure arrogance. Somebody's been messing around with my balalaika. I suddenly found myself doing something that probably provided camera fodder for over 14,000 people last Saturday. Here I am, this bearded nut, riding on a Japanese motorcycle with a balalaika strapped to his back. Any other requests? Now that we're warmed up, this thing is out of tune. By the way, speaking of a strange, sinister Oriental, can't you see the scene now? A little smoky street in the Arab quarter in Beirut. A shuttered cafe of sinister external main. The flittering, guttering lights of the surrounding street lamps barely lighting up the filthy curbstones of the ancient Asian city. And coming along through the darkness, we see that straight-faced, clean-limbed denizen of Indiana, Gene Shepherd, mounts the steps, taps twice, and instantly is ushered in to the smoky den. He is ushered through the dark, swirling smoke of this horrible den of iniquity. Strange Oriental ladies cast languorous glances in his direction from darkened alcoves. Little did he realize that he was about to embark upon the most thrilling escapade of a long and checkered career. Well, hi-ya! Cut it there. You want to hear the rest of that story? It's a very exciting story. Now, seriously, it actually happened to me in a... This is not going to be one of those nights, so you just stick around. We've got a biting satirical story that once again lays bare to the bone the civilization that we are in. Lays bare to the bone. Bring it up there. How you managed to get just the last 8 seconds of that record? Now let's get the first 8 seconds. There we go. Thank you. right, that's enough. That's enough. That'll teach him that there's a lot to this thing. There's a lot more to it than you can see at the. You know, it's very difficult switching from the pentatonic scale to the jug scale. It's a very very different kind of scale. You know, since this is Monday night, and one good thing about Monday night is that we're all vaguely surprised that we made it again. That another week here, another great. Another clay tablet to fill with hieroglyphics to be found by later civilizations to know what happened here. You know, that's a funny thing about those ancient clay tablets. You always have a feeling that they have giant biblical statements on them, don't you? Well, a friend of mine is a archaeologist at a well-known Eastern University, which masquerades under the title University of Pennsylvania. And he spent over 45 years deciphering an ancient clay tablet, and it turned out to be a laundry list. And yes, it was. It really was a laundry list. It had things on it, you know, like jerkins and doing, doing. Underneath it, it says, get new sandal laces. Don't forget today. And he, you know, it's kind of sad to think that all the people must have had that kind of trouble all those years ago. And he worked like a fiend on this thing. Finally got it deciphered and read a paper on it. And everyone in the archaeological society applauded. And they filed it away. And that was the end of 45 years of work. Now he's starting on another clay tablet. And he hopes this one has some giant biblical statements of one kind or another. Speaking of giant biblical statements, I'm watching the television the other night. And, yeah, that's very good. And I notice in an uncommon way that often we tip our hand in the most sinister ways, very subtle ways, like in our commercials. I've often said this, and I'm not alone there, about tipping our hand. Now, there's one commercial that comes on. It says, New York is a rock formation making way for a new home. You know that one? New York is a construction worker getting into his brand new sports car. Doing, doing. New York is a young man mowing his lawn out in Babylon. He chose this. Well, I was struck by that first statement. You know, New York is a rock formation making way for a new home. And it hit me that it's exactly the opposite way around. New York is a new home making way for a rock formation. That's it. Anyone. Doesn't matter. Just put anything on. When I point, put something on. No. Music. Cut it. No. We don't want him hollering. No. Oh, it's too late for that now. Hold it. For crying out loud. New York is a new home making way for a rock formation. That's happened to about 25 new homes I've lived in New York. And the rock formations all look like the Pan Am building. Doing, oi, oi, oi. Any more requests? Anybody want me to sing any of my sinister oriental ballads? As long as we're here, so we've got a lot of trivia we want to clear up on this day. Let's send a piece of. Have you seen the new hip rapping? Well, they're not really hip. You know, there's a new thing called specialty rapping. I'm putting it in my trivia file. You know what specialty wrapping is? You know, it's the kind of wrapping stuff that you wrap gifts in. It says happy birthday, and then it's got pictures of little sailboats or something on it. And then there's another one that says happy Christmas or happy Yarmulke or happy something, you know. And all over it's got all this stuff, you know. Well, there's one here. I noticed someone says a happy future for the graduate. And this was sent to me, I think, it's going right there next to my great vast file on other forms of trivia. And it shows a lot of dogs, you know. Today, we've got a thing on dogs. There's a certain nuttiness in the air that has dogs and animals of all types becoming people. Anthropomorphology. It's not anthropomorphism. There's another syllable in there. Anthropomorphism. That's it. Anthropomorphism. And I want all you purists out there. Anthropomorphism means the desire to somehow give all kinds of human things to animals. You know, they've got a sense of loyalty and they worry. That there's, you know, many a dog out there would read. He'd read if he didn't want to hurt his eyes. And, a lot of people believe that their dog has more thoughts about the international situation than their husband. And certainly loves them more than their husband does, you know. That's anthropomorphism. Well, on this particular piece of wrapping paper, it shows a lot of dogs, you know, very human-looking dogs sitting around. But the cutie pie kind of dog. I said there's one of these books written by somebody who does illustrations for ladies' magazines, something about Coco, the far-out thing. This is, oh, Coco loves it. Coco's a French dog, you know. And like all French girls, it's just completely far out, you know. Loves chocolates and just is so sloppy and loves Rolls Royces. Yes, you'll want to read this book about Coco the far out. That kind of stuff, you know. And here it shows three dogs sitting there. And they've all studied hard, and it says, a happy future for the graduate. Can't you imagine a guy who has just received his Ph.D. in physics with a major in atomic science, and he receives our little dogs there and poodles and all that looking at it. It says, a happy future for the graduate. I think we can give him a little shot in the head there with that one. Come on, let's go. All right, got it. Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. Bring it up and out. Hold it there. Yeah, I don't know what happened to it here. I have a great English piece here, but somewhere it's been lost on the way. That doesn't matter. Speaking of getting things lost on the way, that reminds me, this is... speaking of lost things, this is WOR AM and FM New York, and we have here a promo that says Peter Lynn Hayes and Mary Healy are coming to WOR Radio starting Monday, September 30th. You can enjoy Peter and Mary at their delightful best every weekday morning at 9:15. Good to be back here. Well, for those of you who wonder about the problem, I suspect that the great problem today, people, and it's just beginning to envelop the world. There's no question about it. It's going everywhere, and that's the. I wonder whether women realize the fact that men are having a devil of a time with chicks this in this century. I just wonder whether they do know this. I don't think so either, you know? Seriously. And it's funny thing is that whenever you mention the fact that this is happening, that people are having an awful time with chicks, you know, just in general, all over the world, that women often take this to mean that you've just made an anti-chick statement. You know, it's true. Well, as a matter of actual record, I can tell you this, that if all I have to do is come on the radio and say there's a difference between men and women, and within 30 seconds there are 17 phone calls from angry ladies saying, what have I got against women? I guess the desire on the part of many women is to erase that difference, and I see that many of them are doing pretty well that way. I mean, you know, what with all the new hormone tablets and things. Doing, doing, doing. Doing, doing, doing. Well, it's getting to be a problem. And everywhere, for those of you who think it's only an American culture, you know, a lot of people feel that the American lady is getting tougher and tougher, and the American male is getting more and more recessive in the James Thurber, Walter Mitty vein. With a little touch of Tab Hunter and just a little dash of Tony Perkins there, the Forever Kidsville syndrome. Well, there's certain truth to that. But ladies are getting tough everywhere. And since I have a balalaika here... Ayoknim, young, ayoknim, avodka, very, there's nayata, nanabaja, nak, manana, vodka. Moscow, September 19th. In the old days in the Caucasus, if you wanted a bride, you just went out and abducted one. It's forbidden nowadays under Soviet law. But Zabrek Kiziev decided to ignore the law and organize old-style abduction. We salute tonight Comrade Zabrek. He enlisted cousin and two friends, Sokharov and Badayev, to do strong-arm work with him. The newspaper Sovetskaya Russaya reported today a truck was to be used in the getaway. The girl of his choice, a Miss X, refused to give name later at police station. Miss X was spotted as she got out of a trolley car in Orzonskiznik. She was able to take no more than few steps when someone's strong arms grabbed girl and, just like bag of grain, threw her onto back of truck and away they go. Reporter, nobody noted. Sukharov and Badayev were waiting there for her in truck. But Miss X turned out to be not only modern-minded Soviet girl, but also very tough, papers say. Quickly grasping what was going on, Miss X turned on abductors. It went on. Bang, bang! And Badayev did somersault over side of truck, landing on back of head on cobblestone. Again, bang! And Sukharov this time did somersault, having tossed boys out of truck. Miss X jumped out and regained place in streetcar. The newspaper said Sukharov later moaned, and we quote, "When the girl threw me out of truck, I nearly broke my spine in the fall." The report said four men were later sentenced to various terms in affair. Do not mess with tough Soviet girls. Girl! Tough Soviet. Oh, you got him on brain. Where is my jug band you got? No, British music. No, go with that. Oh, yuck, nam, 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 nam. Always we get Borneo native no matter what. Got very bad line. That's three. You are just hearing rehearsal of John Gambling Show for morning now. I kind of like that news story. It got out. It got out via Pravda, by the way, so it's official. I kind of like the idea of running out and grabbing, throwing her like a sack of grain on the back of the truck and thud. Boing. So everywhere, men are having troubles. Now, I guess one of the reasons, of course, is that existence itself, real life, as we get closer and closer to the true, total machine world, existence itself becomes almost a completely abstract thing. I was listening to a guy being interviewed on one of the shows today on WOR, and he was an expert on automation. And he was trying to tell Fay Henley about a new world that he envisions, which obviously is going to come about, a new world where people are no longer necessary. He paralleled it to the ancient Greek culture, where slaves did all the work, and the Greeks sat around and played zithers and... looked out at the blue Mediterranean and built the Parthenon and scratched and wrote plays like Electra, you know, and all the slaves were down there doing what slaves have to do, like all the scut. Well, he said that we're coming into a situation very rapidly now where this will also hold true in American and, in fact, in 20th century society everywhere. Instead of slaves, however, the machines will be doing all the scut. And people, of course, will be free to run forever in the Elysian fields of art and probably fist fighting and bear baiting and everything else that they do. And Fay kept saying things like, "Well, aren't you sure, though? Don't you think that will create more jobs? Actually, all this leisure time..." Well, no, Fay. He's talking about a world where there are no jobs. And now it's really rapidly coming into being, and we've got to consider this. There are no jobs at all, and the very few people who will run the whole shebang will be highly trained superb technicians and engineers and designers and people of that ilk, all the rest of us are free to do all of our action painting then and scratch. Now, he made some very interesting points, and the reason that I'm mentioning this tonight, because up to a certain point, that is literally what is happening to almost every one of us in one way or another, particularly as you get more and more involved in urban life, the life that is the city life, and practically everybody lives urban life now. There's no such thing really as, well, there is in far remote corners of America, but mostly it is one big city now that stretches from somewhere just a little bit north of Augusta or Atlanta. No, wait, what am I talking about? That main city up there that I spent, Augusta, just a little north of Augusta to somewhere near Key West is one big city all the way down the eastern seaboard. And it sort of washes over into Allentown a little bit. It sort of dribbles off towards Harrisburg and out towards Pittsburgh and then kind of peters out for a while, then picks up again around Wheeling and becomes another enormous city all the way over through Detroit, Chicago, Cleveland, Indianapolis, all that stuff, way on out somewhere near Oklahoma. And it stops a little bit for a while, and then it picks up again. Now the point is all those people live in these tremendous cities, wherever they might be. What do they call them, megalopolis? Megalopolis. Yeah, it's an enormous thing, see? And so more and more, yeah, they're big cities. And probably in the end, 1,000 years from now, the cities won't have names like they have now. No, it won't be New York or Chicago or Pittsburgh. It'll probably be Area 1, Area 2, and Area 3. And you know, that's probably the only reason they'll have areas is to facilitate mailing and things like that. If you're going to send something from Area 1 to Area 3, you have all kinds of numbers, and it goes in the tube, and it automatically is reproduced, and then automatically shot into the guy's house, and all this. And I think in the end, of course, people will be almost completely outmoded. Did I tell you about going back to the steel mill here a couple of weeks ago, and about how they're giving the guys 13-week vacations out there? Oh, I didn't tell that story. Very interesting. I hear very little about this here in the East. And we here in New York, particularly among all the people who writer types and people involved in the theater and so on, are hardly ever aware of the actual human problems that are assailing millions and millions of people in these United States. To believe most of the playwrights who work out of the hothouse atmosphere generally of the writer's mind and the megapolis, most writers do not write in, say, for example, Goshen, Indiana. Very few writers are writing out there. As soon as a kid thinks he's going to be a writer, he directs his entire being is directed towards somehow getting to New York, just the way it is, or getting to Paris, or getting to Marseille, or getting to the Spanish coast somewhere, or getting to Mallorca. He never stays around and writes, very rarely writes out of Goshen or Gary. And that's where it's happening, of course. It's not happening in Mallorca, I'm sorry. It's not happening in the Greek Isles, oh, you writers who want to get out there and write your great novel. You better start writing where you are, because where you are is where it's happening, and there's hardly anybody writing about it. If you want to write about your own festering soul, you can do that any place. You can go to Mallorca if that's what you're worried about. But if you're interested in writing about people in the world, you're going to have to be where it's happening. Well, one of the things that's happening that I must report on tonight is I went out to the mills here a couple of weeks ago. As you know, I think I mentioned it on the air that I took a couple of days off. What's that popping in? That's funny. Oh, it's Walt popping in there. I see. Walt, you wait. You got your show comes on at midnight. Quit fooling around here. I cut it out. You know, I never pop on the Long John show. You stop popping Long John on my show. And next thing I know, there's going to be some. Well, I'll tell you. The way I look at that, well, anyway, I went out to, it's popping all, yeah. When I went out to Chicago, the first thing I did was to try to investigate the old mill world, the steel mill world, where tremendous numbers of Americans find their daily living, their sustenance. And boy, let me tell you, there are problems that the modern world has dreamed up. There are problems out there that nobody has even discussed, even when they have the serious articles, you know, in Harper's. Automation, let's face it, you know, that kind of stuff. What are we going to do about automation? And it shows a guy with a big machine that does the work of 74 people. Well, I had the chance to talk to a steel worker. I sat around and talked to him for about 5 hours. And he happens to be an electrician. Now, an electrician is not an electronics expert. An electrician is not a physicist. He is not an electronic scientist. An electrician is a guy who usually works on big motors. He works on great big switching panels in the mill. He works on enormous heavy equipment that has to do with relays and bus bars. Big, heavy, you know the kind of stuff that an electrician does in heavy industry, Walt. You ever seen him work? They're more machinists than they are electrician, actually. But it's electrical equipment they work with. Now, he had worked at this mill for about 25 or 30 years. He learned his job well. And he worked in the coke plant. And the coke plant uses a lot of electrical equipment. Now, the coke plant, in case you don't know anything about the mills, the coke plant is the plant that heretofore has provided the fuel for the blast furnace. They use coke and various gases and so on for the blast furnace. And it is a byproduct, in a sense, of the steel mill itself, coke. You know, that's one thing that I think you Easterners probably never had much to do with, but all the people who live near a steel mill use coke to burn in their furnaces. Because coke is sold by the steel mills at a very low price because they make a lot of coke. And one of the things that, you know, like a guy in Macy's gets a little discount on his ties and his Italian shoes and his tennis rackets and stuff. Well, a guy who works in the steel mill gets a discount on coke, and he can buy coke at a discount. And so the mill delivers it to people's houses, and they use it. Well, anyway, getting back to the story, the coke plant is an integral part of the mill. At least it has been up to this to now. And he is now being given. The guy says, you know, he says to me, he says, I'm having a vacation next year. He speaks with a slightly foreign accent, as many of them do who work in the mill. He says, a vacation next year, vacation the 13 weeks. I said, 13-week vacation? Yeah, 13-week vacation next year. Well, it turns out that all of the guys who are in his division are being given a 13-week vacation next year. Now, the reason they're being given a 13-week vacation is because the mill where he worked, which was Youngstown Sheet and Tube, the mill employed the particular division he worked in, that is the Indiana Harbor plant, employed something like 11,500 guys, Walt, to turn out X amounts of steel. That is, for years this happened. And now, with automation, they employ roughly 6,500 guys to turn out 2.5 times X steel. Well, nobody knows what happened to the other 5,000 guys, except that they're all standing around out there in the darkness someplace. Now, that's not only one mill, that's all the mills there. That's Carnegie, Illinois, that's Inland Steel, Republic Steel, Ryerson Steel, all the steel mills. Now, that's a little steel mill. Now, if you take a steel mill like, say, Carnegie, which might hire, say, 40,000 men, well, you'll find pretty much the same ratio of men being laid off per the number of men working. So probably you might have 13, 14,000 guys out of that mill. Inland Steel, maybe 25,000 guys used to work there. Maybe there's 17, 18,000 now. Well, so what they do is the guys that are working now are being given 13-week vacations in the middle of the year, or maybe even in the winter sometimes. And they put the other guys to work then. The guys that are wandering out the pasture come in, and then they're allowed to work for 13 weeks. Apparently, they work at the other mill then for 13 weeks in the file, till finally they themselves get a year that is almost like the year of the guy who has a regular job. Well, we're sitting there talking about that, and I And, of course, the first thing that you and I would think about is that, gee, that you know, that sounds great. A guy gets 13 weeks vacation, he gets paid for it. Except he has an unbelievably scared look in his eye. He's a man probably of 60 years old and maybe 55, 60. And I said, well, you know, you get 13-week vacation. That must be great. He said, no, not very good. He says, they don't need men now. No men need now. No men needed in plant now. Well, what he means there, of course, or what he was saying, was that he knows that he himself is not needed there. That even when he comes in and does his work, when he is not on vacation, his work consists more or less of just sort of standing around, because all the real work is being done by the few electronics men who are highly trained and in many cases have master's and doctorate degrees that are working the whole plant. Few engineers, really legitimate mechanical and electrical engineers, and the world of the electrician is practically gone out of the steel work. And by the way, they were considered to be the one guy in the steel mill who was indispensable. I remember when it was said that the electrician was the one guy, when everything else is laid off, the electrician will be there. He's maintaining the machinery and the equipment. Well, of course, all the machinery that he maintains has been replaced. And then the final crusher came when he said, no, next year, no, they don't use coke plant no more. Next year, they have a new system to provide fuel, new gas system for blast furnace, no coke. Which means that his whole mill, his whole division that he worked in, was now wiped out totally. Where he would go, no one knew. Now, this produces a man who has a profound sense of uselessness. I don't know what we're going to do about that. People like to think that immediately this gives guys a large amount of free time. Well, for a man who has spent most of his time working, free time just means sitting, waiting for the next shift. Usually they're not the type who are greatly interested in reading. You know, we're going to have to face the facts that some people are born with a natural artistic quality in them, a natural artistic bent, and most people are not. They're just not. And we like to believe, one of the great liberal traditional beliefs is that give a guy enough education and he becomes interested in the arts. Oh, no. Oh, no. I know many a man who has a tremendous education who wouldn't go across the street to read a book, who would never look at a picture or a piece of art, and is completely involved in the world of the real, what he calls the real or the practical. So it's pretty hard. I heard this man drawing the parallel with the Greek civilization. Of course, what he's not facing up to is that the Greek world was a tiny, tiny world, a very tiny world. And also, one other thing, too, was that the Greek civilization, a large amount of the Greek world, was based also on war. because for the non-artistic citizen, in the Greek world, the non-artistic civilization citizen was a soldier or a sailor, and he went out and fought the wars, the Greek wars, and that gave him some place to blow off steam and to be useful. All the while, the playwrights are back, and Euripides is working away on a play, and Sophocles and Aeschylus are working on their plays, and the people are working out the mathematical laws. But we could not make any room for those soldiers in our new society unless you're going to prepare for great trouble. So we're really faced with something I don't think has actually been looked at clearly. A 13-week, can you imagine a 13-week vacation? Well, now it would be great if it was a 13-week vacation because of your achievements, because of the fact that you're such a good man, and that the work you do is so valuable that you're being rewarded. But to be given a 13-week vacation simply because you're useless, that they would like you out of the way for a while. Oh, boy, that's a different kind of vacation. And this is the fate that is facing millions and millions and millions of people. Not a fate in the future, but now. This guy's 13-week vacation, in case you're interested, starts this February. So it's not in the far distant future. It is right now. And what does this do to a citizen? I'm curious about that. Of course, we again, in the great liberal tradition, we like to feel that education will do it. Education for what? You give a... I heard somebody else say on the air today, in keeping with this particular vein of thought, Faye said, well, you know, there are lots of jobs for people if they'd only take them. A lot of people are not working, and a lot of teenagers aren't working, and there's a lot of jobs around. Why aren't they taking them? Well, what she isn't saying, of course, is that the jobs that the man today, most men, most young men, have been educated beyond the jobs that are available and not quite enough for the jobs that he might possibly have. And so it would be difficult for a high school graduate, let us say, to take a job as a busboy or to take a job swabbing floors at the Horn and Hardart or to take a job washing cars someplace. These are menial tasks that have no goal. No one's against the menial job. I've talked to kids who say, well, look, you know, I'll start doing a lot of hard. I'd love to have a job sweeping floors in the mailroom at WOR or sweeping floors at BBD&O because there's a point to it. But when you have a job sweeping floors at an all-night beanery, what is the point? You know, where's the future except to get another job sweeping floors in an all-night beanery? No, really, it's a real problem. And yet we're faced with a situation where we have large numbers of educated young men, educated to the point where they don't want to work in bad jobs. Why? You can't blame them. Would you want to? If you have graduated from high school, would you seriously want to take a job washing dishes someplace or doing some real menial task? That's about all that's left to many people. Now, take the college thing. We like to assume that everybody has a chance to go to college, but that's not necessarily true. Now, what are we going to do when everybody has graduated from college? Then you've got real problems, boy. That's really a problem. Because then there are only, in a mechanical, technical society, there are only two kinds of jobs available. That's the very high echelon, and there are few of those around. That's the very high echelon or the very lowest, where the guy just oils the cog. There are no in-between jobs. Very few. And that's particularly evident. Have you seen what's happening in the white-collar world? Oh, boy. We have it here. The white-collar world has changed a great deal, too. We like to think of it only as industry. But the white-collar world today, that almost all the in-between jobs, the tabulating jobs, The traffic expert jobs, the expediter jobs. These used to be real experts, you know, in the world of the white collar. There was at the bottom of the world of the white collar, there was the great horde of, the typist pool, the mailboy. There was the guy that ran the ditto machine. And then there was about halfway up the scale, there was the guy who was, let's say, in charge of expediting. There was the guy who was in charge of the traffic department. He knew all about the traffic. He knew all about how to make the WR log, for example, Walt, this guy. And then at the top, there was the executive. He was the man who oversee, his job was to oversee the whole operation. Now, it's the middle guy who's been totally done away with. In fact, we have it right here. I can remember when one of the big experts in a radio station was the traffic man. Now we have a machine, an IBM machine, does all our logs. Believe it or not, the log that has Shepard printed on it comes out of a big machine. And all it takes is a few girls who feed it information at the beginning of the week for changes that might come from time to time. And she just feeds this machine, and at the end of the week, it turns out a log for the next week. Now that used to be the job of a highly paid expert. He's completely done. Now that's another interesting problem. So we have a world here that really in the end will result in just two kinds of people being wanted. Oh, and the one guy who is not wanted at all, of course, is the old man or the old woman. The older people in a technical society are DED, all the way down the line. And so the minute that a guy begins to show just slightly the signs of maturity, down the chute he goes. For no other reason than the fact that he's just doing this. That's all, you know. It's like he's made a bad mistake. He lost his hair. So you know, he really loused up. And he's got to go. I'm curious what kind of a society this might create. You know, we like to think of it as a kind of a paradise. Well, maybe yes, maybe no. I have a feeling that in the end, it's going to be a society in which the great number of the middle guys are going to have a job. And the one thing that all people can do is hate. I suspect that they will wind up hating a great deal. You know, the more affluent a society gets, and we have an affluent society, the more affluent a society gets. This is a thing that's been seen many times in the world. It seems to be a paradox, but the more affluent a society gets, the more it seems to become suspicious, and the more it seems to develop quick hates, quick angers. And Germany, for example, in the late 30s, was really one of the wealthiest countries in Middle Europe, and it became a very belligerent country. Hardly any wars are ever fought by peasant economies, by people who live pretty close to the soil. I don't know of the Eskimos declaring war recently, or making angry statements about the Chinese. But as a nation becomes more abstract and more affluent, more dependent upon slaves, the more it begins to look over at the next nation and begin to feel that it has to change it. England, during its great heyday, was certainly a wealthy country, and it was one of the more belligerent countries of the world. France, during its heyday, too. Spain, during its heyday. All the way on up and down the line. And I'm just curious to see what kind of a paradise we're creating, you know. I suspect that the useless feeling that most citizens of the urban society vaguely feel, you know, the feeling that's summed up in the term you can't fight City Hall, or let's go fight City Hall, no matter what it is, let's fight. You notice that as our society vaguely is changing for the better, socially it certainly has been, we become more dissatisfied with it, that there is more City Hall burning, more effigy burning, more sign carrying today, and hardly anyone will deny but what the social conditions in America are somewhat better than they were, say, 40 or 50 years ago. It's just somehow they run hand in hand. And I suspect that the more we clean up things, the angrier we'll get, the more we'll want to fight, and the more straw men will be hanging from scaffolds, burning, covered with tar and feathers. And then, of course, we'll have to make the final statement.
This is WOR Radio, your station for news.